Okay, good afternoon, everybody. Brishus Rabbi Schreier, and welcome back to our program this summer. Always great to have you here. So we spoke yesterday about the importance of a teva and a mishkan, and about the opportunity to spend time in a Beis HaKnesses and a Beis HaMedrash, about why it's central that we have these kinds of edifices in our lives. And one of the greatest challenges that we face quite often when we deal with this kind of issue is the comments and the attitudes of others that really are not so positive about what it is that we as Jews, as we as God-fearing Jews believe in and do. Very often we are made fun of, we are mocked, we are taunted about the observance that we follow and all the mitzvah things that we practice. And this is something that the Rama already cautions us of in the very first siman in Shulchan Aruch. The Rama writes in Shulchan Aruch Arachayim, Lo yizbayish mipnei bnei adam hamaligim alav ba'avodas Hashem yizbarach. Don't ever allow that others should embarrass you or should make you feel uncomfortable about your avodas Hashem. Everybody has the opportunity to serve Hashem in their own way. And we certainly as a community, as God-fearing Jews, have our own way of serving God, which is not the way of everyone else in the world. And therefore the Rama already warns us in the very first siman in Shulchan Aruch that don't allow that to throw you off. Don't allow that to get in your way, and don't allow that to cloud your understanding of how you are supposed to be serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself. There's a very famous Mishnah in Idios where Akavya ben Mahalalel, who's famous for many other things, but one of the statements that he makes in Mishnayis Idios is, Mutav li hikari shote kol yamav, I would prefer that everybody should call me a shote my whole life. You're a fool, look at you, Akavya ben Mahalalel, look what you're doing. Velo li yaso shah achas rasha lefnei hamakom, I would prefer to be called a shote my entire life by everybody who I come across, and not to be considered a rasha shah achas lefnei hamakom. Even for one moment to be considered a rasha in front of Hashem is not even worth all the embarrassment that I might go through. And there are many who like to live their lives based on what other people say, and always worrying about what he's going to say, what she's going to say, what this person's going to feel, what they're going to think, what they're going to see. And it's something that is a little bit difficult for us at times to shrug off. But listen to the following story that I believe the Bali Musar give. I don't remember where I saw it, but I remember I once saw the story that the Bali Musar give. And obviously it's an apocryphal story about somebody who's always worried about what everyone else is going to say or what they're going to feel and what they're going to think, and how sometimes that makes us look totally absurd and ridiculous in the end of the day if we're always worried about what everyone else is going to say and we don't follow what the Rama says, to just do what we're supposed to do and not worry mipnei hamalikim alav. So the story that the Bali Musar give is about a father and a son who are going out to some yirid, to some fair somewhere. I'm not sure exactly what the story is, but it doesn't make a difference, the details. And they were going together, and the father is riding on his chamor, on his donkey, and the son is walking. And they come across the first person they meet at an intersection, and the person comes over to them and he says, I don't understand, you have a young little boy over here, and he's tiring himself out, he's walking all the way to the yirid, and you're sitting there comfortably on the chamor. What kind of business is this? Where's your sense of compassion? Where's your empathy for your young son? He doesn't have legs that can carry him all the way to the marketplace. So the father thinks about it a little. He says, you know, this person really has a good point. What I'm going to do is, I'm going to bring him up onto the wagon. I'm sorry, and I'm going to go down. So I'm going to switch places with him. That's what they do. So the son comes up onto the wagon. They listen to the advice of this person. The father walks ahead of the son, and the son is riding comfortably on the wagon. Come to the very next intersection, and the next person stopped him, and he says, I don't understand. This scene is so insane. How could it be that you have a father who's an old man, and he has legs that can't carry him anymore, and you're going to let the son, the young son, who is a young, energetic personality, he's going to ride comfortably on the wagon, and you're going to stand and walk to the marketplace? Where's the kibbutz? Where's the derech eretz? What kind of kid are you? What kind of family is this? How do you raise this kind of kid? And the father says to himself, you know, he really has a good point. You know what we're going to do? The two of us now are going to sit on top of the wagon together. Makes a lot of sense. This way, nobody's going to have to walk. Nobody's going to have tainas about the kibbutz of the aim. Nobody's going to have tainas about my lack of compassion and empathy for my son. And this way, we're both going to go together. So he's so worried about what everyone says. And now he feels, how can anyone have a taina anymore? I'm not walking. He's not walking. Now it's good. They come to the very next intersection, and the father and the son are both riding on the chamor. They come to the very next intersection. Somebody stops him and he says, I don't understand. How can you both be riding on the chamor? Don't you have any sense of compassion for the chamor? Don't you realize you're both heavy? And you're going to take this chamor all the way down to the marketplace? I mean, what kind of people are you? Don't you know Tzar Balei Chaim? Don't you know that we have rules in the Torah about not allowing animals to suffer? And both of you are going to sit in the chamor? So he says, well, you know, he really has a good point. I thought I satisfied everybody. He says, you know what? We're both going to walk. This way, the father is not going to give any extra pressure to the chamar. The son is not going to. It's not going to look like a lack of kibbutz of aim. No one's going to have tainas. All three of us are going to walk. So you have the father, the son, and the chamar all walking in a straight line. And he thinks, How can anybody have a taina now? He finally gets to the fourth intersection and somebody stops him and he says, this is the most insane thing I've ever seen. You're going to have a chamor walking. Don't you feel pity for the chamor? I mean, it's going to get tired out. So the father says, you know what, you're right. And him and his son pick up the chamor on their shoulders and they go to the yirid. How ridiculous is the story the Bali Musar tell us, but often this is the way we look. That's what the Bali Musar say. If every intersection in your own life, you're going to stop and worry what he says, what she says, what they say, what he thinks, you have to do what the right thing is. That's what the Ramah says. Lo yidog, a person shouldn't worry about hamaligim, about the people who are going to make comments, are going to say you should be doing this way, and where's the kibbut avayim, and where's the derech eretz, and where's this, and aren't you worried about the tzar balei chaim, and aren't you worried about the chamor? In the end of the day, you're going to end up, if that's the way you live your life, say the Bali Musar, you're going to end up carrying the chamor on your shoulders and not even realize how foolish you look, not even look how insane the scene is by looking and listening to what everyone else is doing instead of thinking about what the right thing for yourself to do. So it's important for us, as we said, to set up a teva, to set up a mishkan, to have places in our lives as Jews, as Avdei Hashem. We have to have the opportunity to not allow ourselves to buckle to the pressure, but to once again reconnect ourselves at certain times in the day with the Ribbono Shel Olam, with the religion, to come to the Beis HaKnesses, to come to the Beis HaMedrash. This is why atmosphere and environment and the climate and condition that we foster, that we create, is something that is so critical and so consequential. It's something that's very important. We all know the famous words of the Rambam in Hilchos Deos. It's been stated so many times in so many Svarim and so many Shiurim. The Rambam says, Derech b'yaso shel adam. Human nature is, says the Rambam, she'lios nimshach b'deosav v'masav achar chaver. A person is naturally drawn, is naturally pulled after his friends, after the environment. And we set up a certain environment because the environment to us is so important. The Rambam says that's why it's important that we live in a community of God-fearing Jews. This is why it's important, says the Rambam, that if a person finds themselves in a chevra, if a person finds themselves in any group of people that is not doing exactly what they are supposed to be doing, you should try your best, like we said yesterday, to disassociate. He bade mitoch ha'edi, you have to disassociate yourself, because the Rambam says so often the sviva, so often the environment in which we live, in which we orbit, is what's going to make a big impact on the way we live our lives as well. There's a very beautiful comment by Rabbi Aaron Cutler when he pointed out that the Gemara says in Maseches Shavuos Daf Lamed that when you have a dayan who's judging in din Torah, he says, "Aser." The Gemara says, "Aser le dayan lahaniach talmid bur l'sheves lefanav bedin." A dayan is not allowed to have some foolish talmid sit there by the din Torah. Why not? Why don't you say it will be good shemesh for him? The young child, the young Talmud, doesn't really know how to down a din Torah. He's going to watch his Rabbeim. He's going to have a lot of shemesh. He's going to become a big Talmud Chacham. What's wrong with having a young Talmud Chacham sit there if he's not so learned? Why can't he have him sit there just to learn the ropes, to understand how it is that we're supposed to go about adjudicating various cases in the community that we have? So the Rishonim write over there, the Torah quotes this from Rashi and other Rishonim write as well, that the reason why is because we're concerned that maybe the Talmud in the middle is going to hear something that he doesn't agree with, even though he doesn't know anything, he's not really learned. They're talking about the fanciest areas of Chosha Mishpat. This Talmud hasn't even opened the Baba Kama before. He doesn't know what he's talking about. But the Talmud is not going to understand something. He's going to start arguing with the Dayan who's sitting there. And he's going to say, well, maybe this, maybe that. You're going to start being Mevalbel the Dayan. You're going to confuse him. Because the Talmud is going to start asking all sorts of ridiculous questions that have nothing to do with the case. And then the dayan is going to give the wrong psak. That's what the Gemara says. That's the way the Rishonim explain why when you have it in Torah, it has to be with a certain degree of seriousness. And you cannot have a young boor, a young Talmud Chacham, who's not really educated enough about the case, be involved at all. This is what the Gemara says. So Rabbi Aaron Cutler pointed out and he said, what are we talking about here? Who actually sits on a din Torah? What kind of dayan? So think about the Rabbanut in Eretz Yisrael. So you have Rabbi Avadya Yosef was the head dayan in the time. And you have, and at his right side is sitting Rabbi Yashiv, was the second dayan. They were both on the Rabbanut together. And the third on the other side was Rabbi Tzalo Zolti. So you have Rav of Yerushalayim, is Rabbi Tzalo Zolti, together with Rabbi Avadya Yosef, who's the Rav of all the Svardim all over the world. And Rabbi Yashiv was the Rav of basically all the Ashkenazim all over the world. So you have the three of them sitting on a din Torah. Who's going to come sit there? Shechter's going to come sit down and watch what's going on with the three dayanim downing a din Torah. And what's going to happen? They're going to start listening to the case, and I'm going to say, I don't really understand. Could someone explain to me which Siman and Shulchan Aruch are you referring to? I'm not really familiar. Shechter, stop making trouble. What do you mean? I'm not making trouble. I'm just trying to understand that. I'm going to start arguing with Rabbi Avadya Yosef and with Rabbi Yashim and with Rabbi Tzalo Zolti, and they're going to get confused because of my ridiculous arguments? Really? Really? Is that what's going to happen? Says Rabbi Aaron Cutler, you see what an influence a chevra has. And even you could be the greatest dayan in the world. That's what the Gemara is telling us. You could be Rabbi Avad Yosef, and you could be Rabbi Yashar, you could be Rabbi Tzal Zolti, all sitting together on a din Torah, and still, if Shechter sitting in the room making trouble and confusing everybody, that's going to throw off the din Torah. It doesn't matter how experienced the dayanim are, it doesn't matter how great Talmidei Chacham they are. The Gemara says we always have to be concerned about those who we surround ourselves with. And this is why a Beis HaKnesses and a Beis HaMedrash is so important. That's what David HaMelech says in Tehillim, Chaver ani l'chal asher yiru'ucha. My friends are those asher yiru'ucha that fear God as well, because it's not good enough to have friends who are Orthodox Jews. It's not good enough to have friends who are look like me and act like me. You have to have somebody who also has Yirah Shamayim in order that they should be able to get an impression on the way you live your life as well. There's a interesting comment that the Chazon Ish made, that Rashi tells us in the beginning of Parshas Noach, Noach ish tzadik tamim haya bedoro sub. So Rashi says, some say it's l'shvach, some say it's l'gnai, maybe Noach was a good person, a bad person, ilu haya bedoro shal Avram, had he been in the generation of Avram Avinu, well, come on, he would have been nothing. He would have been a nobody. Avram Avinu was such a towering figure, Noach would not have been considered anything. Said the Chazon Ish, you can have a different spin on. Chazon Ish said, ilu haya bedoro shal Avram, if only Noach had the opportunity to be living in the Dor of Avram, can you imagine what he would have been? Because he would have been living with Avraham Avinu. And if a person lives in the same generation, in the same atmosphere as somebody the likes of Avraham Avinu, you never know what can come out of you. You're not just going to be a regular Noach, that the Torah says. You're going to be the most incredible Noach, because you're living in the same time, in the same generation as the great Avraham Avinu. Rav Shmuel Rozovsky, who was a very famous Rosh Hashiva in the last 50 years, Rav Shmuel Rozovsky said over the following story about Rabbi Cheskel Levenstein, who was the Mashkiach in the Panavizha Yeshiva. So he said that the Mashkiach came to America once, and they were taking him in a car, and the car, they didn't want anyone to see who was in the car, because they didn't want to bother him, so they put shades on the window shades, on the windows of the car, that nobody should look in and start crowding around the car. As we see in Israel, you always see those pictures of Chaim Kanievsky goes to a Levaya, all of a sudden, he can't even drive anymore, everyone's crowding around the car, so that's what happened here. So Rabbi Cheskel Levenstein is going in the car, and he says to him, get me out of here, I gotta go back on the plane, this is all Olam Hazeh, this whole place is Olam Hazeh. So Rav Shmuel Rozovsky turned to him and he said, I don't really understand. You haven't even looked out the windows. You have window shades. You can't even see what's going on. What do you mean this is all Hevel HaVolam is all HaMazah? What do you feel? What do you see? You don't even understand what environment you're in. So he explained to him the following. He said, when you have a bottle of wine on the table and you take the cork out, unless a person goes and actually takes a drink of the wine, you're not going to become intoxicated from the wine. You're not going to become inebriated. You're not drinking anything. It's only he or she who goes and takes a cup of wine and actually drinks a little bit too much, then you're going to get drunk. However, said Rabbi Cheskel Levenstein, what if you have a person who goes to the winery? You go to the factory where they manufacture wine, and you're sitting there all day and you don't take a sip of wine. He says you're going to walk out being intoxicated. Why? Because there are some places which is like a factory of wine where it's so obvious to anyone who comes in there, it's going to be so overpowering to anyone who goes through that experience, it's going to be noticeable after you walk out, and you're not going to be the same kind of person. Not because you took a drink, but because you were exposed to something that is so potent, that's so powerful. And he said that's the same that I feel over here. There are some places which are a base haroshes of Olam Hazeh. He said there are some places which are, shall we say, a factory of Olam Hazeh. He said that's what I feel like. I came to America. I've never been in this place. I don't know what it is. I just feel like it's a factory. Even though I haven't looked out the windows, I don't know what's going on, I still feel like it's a factory of Olam Hazeh, it's a factory of Hevel HaVolam, and just by being in this environment, he said, it's something that I cannot handle. So Shmuel Rozovsky listened to him, and he said, well, if that's your feeling, then Kal V'chomer Ben Ben Osho Kal V'chomer, a person who spends time going to shul every day, three times a day, a person who goes ahead and spends time at a Beis HaMedrash and a Beis HaKnesses, he said, can you not imagine that will be the same? You will be shikr min ha-Torah min ha-Tfilah. He said you will be intoxicated, inebriated from the experience of learning Torah, of davening, of being together with the tzibur, of having the opportunity to be mekadesh shem shamayim all together in the Beis HaMedrash and the Beis HaKnesses. Said Reb Shmuel Rozovsky, if that's what you feel about Olam Hazeh, about America, imagine what you would feel if you would only go into a Beis HaMedrash or a Beis HaKnesses, which is a factory of ruchnius, which is a Beis Charoshes of Olam Haba. That's something that we certainly can feel when we come, when we spend time delving into the beauty of a Beis HaMedrash or a Beis HaKnesses. This is what we mean when we say, Ashrei Yoshevei Beisecha, just by sitting in the house of Hashem, it's already going to make an impact on us. Even if a person never goes and never does anything in the Beis HaMedrash or the Beis HaKnesses, even if you fall asleep through every shiur that takes place in the Beis HaMedrash, still, you have the opportunity to sit and be a Yoshevei Beisecha, and that's already going to be enough to make an impact on a person's persona on the way we live our lives. There's a very fascinating story that we're told about Yosef Mishisa. Yosef Mishisa was a person who was a God-fearing Jew, and at the time of the Churban Bayis Sheni, when the Romans wanted to conquer the Beis Hamikdash, so they decided we should really send in one of the Frum, one of the Orthodox Jews, to do the job for us. He's going to be the first one to go and defile the Beis Hamikdash, and this way, it won't really be our fault. That's what they thought. They were going to fool God. So they decide they're going to choose Yosef Mishisa. I don't know why they chose him. He's going to be the guinea pig that we're going to send in, the Orthodox Jew, to go and defile the Beis Hamikdash. So he goes in, and they tell him, if you go and you defile the Beis Hamikdash, as we're telling you to do, we're going to give you any keli that you decide to take can be yours. You can keep it. So fine, he goes in, and what can he do? His hands are tied. They tell him he has to go, otherwise they're going to kill him. So he goes in, he starts defiling the Beis Hamikdash, and he walks out with a menorah. Pretty good acquisition. He comes out, and the Romans turn to him and they say, excuse me, ein darko shel hediyot l'shtameis bazu. We meant if you were going to take a pan, a spoon, or something, you can't walk out with a menorah. We're not going to let you have that. Maybe the king can have the menorah. Ein darko shel hediyot l'shtameis bazu. We're not going to let you do that. So then they tell him, you better go back in again and do some more destruction, and you have to take a different keli. And he absolutely refuses. And he says, no, I refuse to go in. He does not want to go. He declines their offer, and they say, don't worry, we're going to give you any keli you take. He says, doesn't matter, I don't want it, I'm not interested. And he says, lo dai sheikh asti lalokai pam achas. It's not bad enough that I already made God angry one time. Achiseni pam shnia, now I should go again and make him angry again. He refuses to go inside. He doesn't want to have anything to do with this, and he doesn't want to be a part of it. In the end, they torture him, and they beat him, and they give him all sorts of terrible punishments for not wanting to go along with the plan. And the question that many Mefarshim on the Medrash ask is, I don't understand. The first time he went in, he had no problem going ahead, defiling the Beis HaMikdash. He even walks out with the menorah. And now, all of a sudden, when they're going to beat him, and they're threatening him with his life, and they're threatening him with all kinds of terrible yisurim that he's going to have to suffer for not listening to the orders, now all of a sudden he says, no, 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 I don't want to anger God. What happened? You already angered God. You went in the first time. What's so bad about doing it the second time? Obviously, it's worse to do it a second time. But he didn't have that kind of consciousness the first time, so how come he had it all of a sudden the second? The answer is, say the Mefarshim, because the atmosphere of the Beis HaMikdash rubbed off on him. In between the first time and the second time, he had an experience of going into the Beis HaMikdash. And even though he was going in to defile the Beis HaMikdash, and even though he was going in under strict order from the Romans to destroy the Beis HaMikdash, still, the experience of being in the Beis HaMikdash alone is enough to rub off on a person and make them understand this is not something small that you're dealing with. This is something you have to take seriously. It's something you have to understand what the perspective is of what exactly you're trying to do. That's what the Medrash says on the Pasuk, Holik el Chachamim Yechkam. The Pasuk says in Mishlei, somebody who goes to a Chacham will become smarter. So what does that mean? You go to a Chacham, you become smart? What is it, like just a fusion? It goes all of a sudden from the Chacham's brain to somebody else's brain? What does that mean? Says the Medrash, what it means is a person who goes into a chanush shel bosem, a person who goes into a store where they sell perfume, you will come out smelling like perfume even if you don't end up purchasing any of the items in the store. Because just by being in that kind of atmosphere is already enough to have the feeling and to have the influence of the store that you have visited. Rabbi Yonasan Eibishitz writes, and with this we'll close for Mincha, that the reason why the Mishnah says in Pirkei Avos, k'nei lecha chaver, aseh lecha rav u'k'nei lecha chaver, why does he say aseh lecha rav, make for yourself a rabbi? Meaning, don't pay the rabbi a salary. That's not important. But k'nei lecha chaver, you better go out and spend a lot of money getting a friend. Why is that more important than having a rabbi? Isn't it more important to have a rabbi who's going to teach you the right thing to do, who's going to tell you what you're doing wrong, who's going to teach you all the halachas of the Torah? Why is it more important to have a friend than to have a rav? Says Rabbi Yonasan Eibishitz in the middle of a long drasha, but he says so beautifully, ki chaver tov nitzrach yoser meharav. To have a good atmosphere, a good chevra, a good friend, is something that's so much more essential, so much more important than having a spiritual leader. Why? You have to spend sometimes a lot of money to have a good friend. Says Rabbi Yonasan Eibishitz, because if you're stuck with the wrong chevra, or on the other hand, if you're stuck with the right chevra, you can have something that's going to be more powerful than asara rabbanim. Because if a person lives in the right atmosphere, in the Teva, in the Mishkan, if you always make sure to reconnect yourself with the atmosphere that's a positive one, that's one that's holecha chachamim yechkam, that will influence our lives in a positive way, it's something that can have a more profound impression and impact on our lives than asara rabbanim. Rav Hanani ben Akash, Omer Ratzah, Kadosh Baruch Hu.